Wednesday. In the window of every shop and store around the Messina Square, there was a large green football schedule, as if the customers and the townsfolk needed help in remembering that the Spartans played every Friday night. And on every lamppost in front of the shops and stores, there were green and white banners that went up in late August and came down when the season was over. Neely remembered the banners from the days when he rode his bike along the walkways. Nothing had changed. The large green schedules were the same every year, the games in bold print, outlined by the smiling faces of the seniors. Along the bottom, small ads of all the local sponsors, which included every single business in Messina. No one was left off the schedule. As he entered Renfro's cafe, one step behind Paul, Neely took a deep breath and told himself to smile, to be polite. These folks, after all, once adored him. The thick smell of things frying hit him at the door, then the sound of pots rattling in the distance. The smells and sounds had not changed from the time his father brought him to Renfro's for hot chocolate on Saturday mornings, where the locals relived and replayed the latest Spartan victory. During the season, each football player could eat once a week at Renfro's at no charge, a simple and generous gesture that had been sorely tested shortly after the school was integrated. Would Renfro's allow black players the same privilege? Damn right, came the word from Eddie Rake, and the cafe became one of the first in the state to voluntarily integrate itself. Paul spoke to most of the men huddled over their coffee, but he kept moving toward a booth by the window. Neely nodded and tried to avoid eye contact. By the time they slid into their seats, the secret was out. Neely Crenshaw was back in town. The walls were covered with old football schedules, framed newspaper stories, pennants, autographed jerseys, and hundreds of photos. Team photos lined in neat chronological order above the counter, action shots lifted from the local paper, and large black and whites of the greatest of Spartans. Neely's was above the cash register, a photo of him as a senior, posing with the football cocked and ready to fire. No helmet, no smile, all business and attitude and ego, long, untamed hair, 3 days' worth of stubble and peach fuzz, eyes looking somewhere in the distance, no doubt dreaming of future glory. You were so cute back then, Paul said. Seems like yesterday, then it seems like a dream. In the center of the longest wall, there was a shrine to Eddie Rake, a large color photo of him standing near one of the goalposts, and under it the record, 418 wins, 62 losses, 13 state titles. According to the pre-dawn gossip, Rake was still clinging to life, and the town was still clinging to him. The chatter was subdued, no laughter, no jokes, no windy stories of fishing triumphs, none of the usual spats over politics. A tiny waitress in a green and white outfit brought them coffee and took their orders. She knew Paul, but did not recognize the guy with him. Is Maggie still around? Neely asked. Nursing home, Paul said. Maggie Renfro had been serving scalded coffee and oily eggs for decades. She had also dealt relentlessly in all areas of gossip and rumor surrounding the Spartan football team. Because she had given free meals to the players, she had managed to do what everyone else in Messina tried to do. Wiggle in a little closer to the boys and their coach. A gentleman approached and nodded awkwardly at Neely. Just wanted to say hello, he said, easing out his right hand. Good to see you again, after all this time. You were something. Neely shook his hand and said, thanks. The handshake was brief. Neely broke eye contact. The gentleman took the hint and withdrew. No one followed him. There were quick glances and awkward stares, but the other seemed content to brood over the coffee and ignore him. After all, he had ignored them for the past 15 years. Messina owned its heroes, and they were expected to enjoy the nostalgia. When was the last time you saw Screamer? Paul asked. Neely snorted and looked out the window. I haven't seen her since college. Not a word? One letter, years back. Fancy stationery from some place in Hollywood. Said she was taking the place by storm. Said she'd be a lot more famous than I ever thought about being. Pretty nasty stuff. I didn't respond. She showed up for our 10-year reunion, Paul said, an actress, nothing but blonde hair and legs, outfits that have never been seen around here. A pretty elaborate production, name dropping right and left, this producer, that director, a bunch of actors I'd never heard of. I got the impression she was spending more time in bed than in front of the camera. That's Screamer. You should know. How'd she look? Tired. Any credits? Quite a few, and they changed by the hour. We compared notes later, and no one had seen anything she said she'd been in. It was all a show. Typical Screamer, except that now she's Tessa. Tessa Canyon. Tessa Canyon, Neely said. Yep. Sounds like a porn star. I think that's where she's headed. Poor girl. Poor girl, Paul repeated. She's a miserable, self-absorbed idiot whose only claim to fame was that she was Neely Crenshaw's girlfriend. Yeah, but those legs. They both smiled for a long time.